Seth Speaks is one of the most remarkable works of channeled information in history. It is the product of a process that began when Jane Roberts received what she called her psychic initiation one evening in September 1963 as she sat writing poetry. As she explained it, quote, "Suddenly my consciousness left my body, and my mind was barraged by ideas that were astonishing and new to me at the time," unquote. Because of that experience, Miss Roberts and her husband, Robert Butts, started doing research into psychic activity and planning a book. In line with their research, they began experimenting with a Ouija board. After the first few sessions, the pointer spelled out messages that claimed to come from a personality calling himself Seth. As neither Miss Roberts or her husband had any psychic background, they initially presumed that the messages were coming from Miss Roberts' subconscious. However, she soon began to feel compelled to speak these messages aloud, and the Ouija board became redundant as, within a month, she was easily passing into trance and speaking for Seth while in a trance state. Seth communicated in twice-weekly sessions, in the process developing a continuing manuscript that would ultimately total over 6,000 typewritten pages. From those pages, Miss Roberts first compiled a book titled The Seth Material. Then, on January 19th, 1970, Seth announced that he would be dictating a book of his own. The dictation began 2 days later on January 21st and was concluded on August 11th, 1971. An appendix was added over the following 6 weeks. The title that Seth gave to his book was Seth Speaks, The Eternal Validity of the Soul. In it, he discusses a vast range of subjects, in a text that is so voluminous, we cannot hope to reproduce it here in its entirety. Therefore, we have focused on some specific aspects and areas of various key issues. Among them, the identity and multidimensional aspect of the soul. Consciousness. Death and after-death experiences. Dreams. Reincarnation. Christ, his crucifixion, and the second coming. The nature of God, and of good and evil. The rise and fall of civilizations that preceded Atlantis. And how a brotherhood of speakers has worked throughout history to preserve the essential knowledge of humankind. The information within this program is challenging, thought-provoking, sometimes controversial. We are sure you'll agree that it is also, in the truest sense of the word, remarkable. What you are about to hear are the words of Seth, as spoken by Jane Roberts and transcribed by her husband, Robert Butts, and narrated on this recording by Scott Turchin. As we begin, Seth speaks about himself, his environment, the nature of reality, and the nature of ourselves.
You have heard of ghost hunters. I can quite literally be called a ghost writer, though I do not approve of the term ghost. It is true that I am usually not seen in physical terms. I do not like the word spirit, either. Yet, if your definition of that word implies the idea of a personality without a physical body, then I would have to agree that the description fits me. I address an unseen audience. However, I know that they exist, and therefore I shall ask each of them, now, to grant me the same privilege. I communicate with you through the auspices of a woman of whom I have become quite fond. To others, it seems strange that I address her as Rupert and him, but the fact is that I have known her in other times and places by other names. Names are not important, however. My name is Seth. Names are simply designations, symbols, and yet, since you must use them, I shall also. I write this with the cooperation of Rupert, who speaks the words for me. In this life, Rupert is called Jane, and her husband, Robert Butts, takes down the words that Jane speaks. I call him Joseph. You may suppose that you are physical creatures, bound within physical bodies, imprisoned within bone, flesh, and skin. If you believe that your existence is dependent upon this corporeal image, then you feel in danger of extinction. No physical form lasts, and no body, however beautiful in youth, retains the same vigor and enchantment in old age. If you identify with your own youth, or beauty, or intellect, or accomplishments, then there is the constant gnawing knowledge that these attributes can and will vanish. I am speaking to assure you that this is not the case. Basically, you are no more of a physical being than I am, and I have donned and discarded more bodies than I care to tell. I am quite independent of a physical image, and so are you. Consciousness creates form. It is not the other way around. All personalities are not physical. It is only because you are so busily concerned with daily matters that you do not realize that there is a portion of you who knows that its own powers are far superior to those shown by the ordinary self. You have each lived other existences, and that knowledge is within you, though you are not consciously aware of it. I hope that this will serve to release the deeply intuitive self within each of you, and to bring to the foreground of consciousness whatever particular insights will serve you most. I speak to those who believe in a God, and those who do not, to those who believe that science will find all answers as to the nature of reality, and to those who do not. I hope to give you clues that will enable you to study the nature of reality for yourself as you have never studied it before. There are several things that I shall ask you to understand. You are not stuck in time like a fly in a closed bottle, whose wings are therefore useless. You cannot trust your physical senses to give you a true picture of reality. They are lovely liars, with such a fantastic tale to tell that you believe it without question. You are sometimes wiser, more creative, and far more knowledgeable when you are dreaming than when you are awake. I am primarily a personality with a message. You create the world that you know. You have been given perhaps the most awesome gift of all, the ability to project your thought outward into physical form. The fact is that each of you create your own physical reality, and, en masse, you create both the glories and the terrors that exist within your earthly experience. Until you realize that you are the creators, you will refuse to accept this responsibility. Consciousness is a way of perceiving the various dimensions of reality. Consciousness, as you know it, is highly specialized. The physical senses allow you to perceive the three-dimensional world, and yet by their very nature they can inhibit the perception of other equally valid dimensions. Most of you identify with your daily physically oriented self. You do not identify with the inner portion of yourselves. You prefer to identify with the part of you who watches television, or cooks, or works, the part you think knows what it is doing. But the seemingly unconscious portion of yourself is far more knowledgeable, and upon its smooth functioning, your entire physical existence depends. This portion is conscious, aware, alert. I call it the inner ego, for it directs inner activities. It correlates information that is perceived not through the physical senses, but through other inner channels. It is the inner perceiver of reality that exists beyond the three-dimensional. It carries within it the memory of each of your past existences. The outer ego and the inner ego operate together, the one to enable you to manipulate in the world that you know, the other to bring you those delicate inner perceptions without which physical existence could not be maintained. There is, however, a portion of you, the deeper identity, who forms both the inner ego and the outer ego, who decided that you would be a physical being in this place and in this time. This is the core of your identity, the psychic seed from which you sprang, the multidimensional personality of which you are part. You cannot understand yourselves, and you cannot accept my independent existence until you rid yourself of the notion that personality is a here and now attribute of consciousness. The self that you know is but one fragment of your entire identity. These fragment selves are not strung together, however, like beads on a string. They are more like the various skins of an onion or segments of an orange, all connected through the one vitality and growing out into various realities while springing from the same source. Nothing exists, neither rock, mineral, plant, animal, or air, that is not filled with consciousness of its own kind. So you stand amid a constant vital commotion, a gestalt of aware energy. And you are yourselves physically composed of conscious cells that carry within themselves the realization of their own identity, that cooperate willingly to form the corporeal structure that is your physical body. I am saying, of course, that there is no such thing as dead matter. There is no object that was not formed by consciousness, and each consciousness, regardless of its degree, rejoices in sensation and creativity. You cannot understand what you are unless you understand such matters. The ego is a jealous god, and it wants its interests served. It does not want to admit the reality of any dimensions except those within which it feels comfortable and can understand. If you have a limited conception of the nature of reality, then your ego will do its best to keep you in the small, enclosed area of your accepted reality. If, on the other hand, your intuitions and creative instincts are allowed freedom, then they communicate some knowledge of greater dimensions to this most physically oriented portion of your personality. Personality is a gestalt of ever-changing perception. It is the part of the identity which perceives. I do not force my perceptions upon the woman through whom I speak, nor is her consciousness blotted out during our communications. Instead, there is an expansion of her consciousness and a projection of energy that is directed away from three-dimensional reality. This concentration away from the physical system may make it appear as if her consciousness is blotted out. Instead, more is added to it. There is within Rupert's personality a rather unique facility that makes our communications possible. I will try to put this as simply as possible. There is within his psyche what amounts to a transparent dimensional warp that serves almost like an open window through which other realities can be perceived. A multidimensional opening that has to some extent escaped being clouded over by the shade of physical focus. The physical senses usually blind you to these open channels, for they perceive reality only in their own image. To some extent, then, I enter your reality through a psychological warp in your space and time. In a manner of speaking, such an open channel serves much as a pathway between Rupert's personality and my own, so that communication is possible between. My environment now is not the one in which you will find yourself immediately after death. You must die many times before you enter this particular plane of existence. Birth is much more of a shock than death. Sometimes when you die, you do not realize it, but birth almost always implies a sharp and sudden recognition. So there is no need to fear death. And I, who have died more times than I care to tell, speak these words to tell you so. In my home environment, I assume whatever shape I please, and it may vary, and does, with the nature of my thoughts. This ability to change form is an inherent characteristic of any consciousness. Only the degree of proficiency and actualization varies. You can see this in your own system, in a slowed-down version, when you observe the changing forms taken by living matter through its evolutionary history. My environment changes constantly, and therefore is composed of exquisite imbalances, where change is allowed full play. Your own time structure misleads you into your ideas of the relative permanency of physical matter, and you close your eyes to the constant alterations within it. Your physical senses confine you, as best they can, to the perception of a highly formalized reality. Only through the use of the intuitions, and in sleep and dream states, as a rule, can you perceive the joyfully changing nature of your own and any consciousness. Now, many of these freedoms are quite natural to you in the dream state, and you form dream environments often to exercise such potentials. You can learn to change your physical environment by learning to change and manipulate your dream environment. You can also suggest specific dreams in which a desired change is seen, and under certain conditions, these will then appear in your physical reality. Often, you do this without realizing it. The senses that you use, in a very real manner, create the environment that you perceive. Your physical senses necessitate the perception of a three-dimensional reality. Consciousness is equipped with inner perceptors, however. These are inherent within all consciousness, regardless of its development. Using the inner senses, we become conscious creators, co-creators. But you are unconscious co-creators, whether you know it or not. If our environment seems unstructured to you, it is only because you do not understand the true nature of order, which has nothing to do with permanent form, but only appears to have, from your perspective. It is quite true that your physical senses create the reality that they perceive. A tree is something far different to a microbe, a bird, an insect, and a man who stands beneath it. I am not saying that the tree only appears to be different. It is different. You perceive its reality through one set of highly specialized senses. This does not mean that its reality exists in that form in any more basic way than it exists in the form perceived by the microbe, insect, or bird. you cannot perceive the quite valid reality of that tree in any context but your own. This applies to anything within the physical system that you know. It is not that physical reality is false. It is that the physical picture is simply one of an infinite number of ways of perceiving the various guises through which consciousness expresses itself. The physical senses force you to translate experience into physical perceptions. The inner senses open your range of perception, allow you to interpret experience in a far freer manner, and to create new forms and new channels through which you, or any consciousness, can know itself. You look out into the physical universe and interpret reality according to the information received from your outer senses. You are fascinated with physical reality, and you are in as deep a trance now as the woman is through whom I write this book. All of your attention is focused in a highly specialized way upon one shining, bright point that you call reality. There are other realities all about you, but you ignore their existence, and you blot out all stimuli that come from them. There is a reason for such a trance, as you will discover, but little by little you must wake up. My purpose is to open your inner eyes. Your ideas of space are highly erroneous. In a very real manner, space as you perceive it simply does not exist. Not only is the illusion of space caused by your own physical perceptive mechanisms, but is also caused by mental patterns that you have accepted, patterns that are adopted by consciousness when it reaches a certain stage of evolution within your system. When you arrive or emerge into physical life, not only is your mind not a blank slate, waiting for the scrolls that experience will write upon it, but you are already equipped with a memory bank far surpassing that of any computer. You face your first day upon the planet with skills and abilities already built in, though they may or may not be used. And they are not merely the result of heredity, as you think of it. You may think of your soul or entity, though only briefly and for the sake of this analogy, as some conscious and living, divinely inspired computer who programs its own existences and lifetimes. Your planetary systems exist at once, simultaneously, both in time and in space. The universe that you seem to perceive, either visually or through instruments, appears to be composed of galaxies, stars, and planets at various distances from you. Basically, however, this is an illusion. Your senses and your very existence as physical creatures program you to perceive the universe in such a way. The universe, as you know it, is your interpretation of events as they intrude upon your three-dimensional reality. The events are mental. When I enter your system, I move through a series of mental and psychic events. You would interpret these events as space and time, and so, often, I must use these terms, for I must use your language rather than my own. When I enter your environment, I turn my consciousness in your direction. In one way, I translate what I am into an event that you can understand to some extent. In a much more limited manner, any artist does the same thing when he translates what he is, or a portion of it, into a painting. When I enter your system, I intrude into three-dimensional reality. Whether or not you realize it, each of you intrudes into other systems of reality in your dream states without the full participation of your normally conscious self. In subjective experience, you leave behind physical existence and act, at times, with strong purpose and creative validity within dreams that you forget the instant you awaken. When I contact your reality, therefore, it is as if I were entering one of your dreams. I can be aware of myself as I dictate this book through Jane Roberts, and yet also be aware of myself in my own environment. I send only a portion of myself here, as you perhaps send out a portion of your consciousness as you write a letter to a friend, and yet are aware of the room in which you sit. I send out much more than you do in a letter, for a portion of my consciousness is now within the entranced woman as I dictate, but the analogy is close enough.
And now Seth speaks of the soul and the nature of perception.
With a little background given so far, we can begin to discuss the subject of this program, the eternal validity of the soul. Even when we are exploring other issues, we will be trying to illustrate the multidimensional aspect of this inner self. There are many misconceptions connected with it, and first of all, we shall try to dismiss these. First of all, a soul is not something that you have. It is what you are. I usually use the term entity in preference to the term soul, simply because its connotations are less religious in an organizational sense. The trouble is that you frequently consider the soul, or entity, as a finished, static thing that belongs to you but is not you. The soul, or entity, in other words, your most intimate, powerful, inner identity, is and must be forever changing. It is not, therefore, something like a cherished heirloom. It is alive, responsive, curious. It forms the flesh and the world that you know, and it is in a state of becoming. Often it seems that the soul is thought of as a precious stone, to be finally presented as a gift to God, or considered as some women used to consider their virginity, something highly prized that must be lost, the losing of it being signified as a fine gift to the receiver. In many philosophies, this sort of idea is retained, the soul being returned to a primal giver, or being dissolved in a nebulous state somewhere between being and non-being. The soul is, however, first of all, creative. The soul, or entity, is itself the most highly motivated, most highly energized, and most potent consciousness unit known in any universe. It is energy concentrated to a degree quite unbelievable to you. It contains unlimited potentials, but it must work out its own identity and form its own worlds. It carries within it the burden of all being. Within it are personality potentials beyond your comprehension. Remember, this is your own soul or entity I am speaking of, as well as soul or entity in general. You are one manifestation of your own soul. How many of you would want to limit your reality, your entire reality, to the experience you now know? You do this when you imagine that your present self is your entire personality, or insist that your identity be maintained unchanged through an endless eternity. The soul, above all, perceives and creates. Remember again that you are a soul now. The soul within you, therefore, is now perceiving. Its methods of perception are the same now as they were before your physical birth, and as they will be after your physical death. So basically, the inner portion of you, the soul stuff, will not suddenly change its methods of perception nor its characteristics after physical death. You can find out what the soul is now, therefore. It is not something waiting for you at your death, nor is it something you must save or redeem, and it is also something that you cannot lose. The term, to lose or save your soul, has been grossly misinterpreted and distorted, for it is the part of you that is indeed indestructible. Your own personality as you know it, that portion of you that you consider most precious, most uniquely you, will also never be destroyed or lost. It is a portion of the soul. The soul perceives all experience directly. Most experiences of which you are aware come packaged in physical wrapping, and you take the wrapping for the experience itself and do not think of looking inside. The soul, however, does not need to follow the laws and principles that are a part of the physical reality, and it does not depend upon physical perception. The soul's perceptions are of acts and events that are mental, that lie, so to speak, beneath physical events as you know them. The soul's perceptions are not dependent upon time, because time is a physical camouflage and does not apply to non-physical reality. It then follows that some hints of the soul's direct experience can be gained by momentarily switching the physical senses off, by refusing to use them as perceptors, and falling back upon other methods. Now you do this to some extent in the dream state, but even then, in many dreams, you still tend to translate experience into hallucinatory physical terms. Most of the dreams that you recall are of this nature. At certain depths of sleep, however, the soul's perception operates relatively unhampered. You drink, so to speak, from the pure well of perception. You communicate with the depths of your own being and the source of your creativity. These experiences, not being translated physically, do not remain in the morning. You do not remember them as dreams. The soul can be considered as an electromagnetic energy field, of which you are part. It is a field of concentrated action when you consider it in this light, a powerhouse of probabilities or probable actions seeking to be expressed. It is a grouping of non-physical consciousness that nevertheless knows itself as an identity. Look at it this way. The young woman through whom I speak once stated in a poem, and I quote, These atoms speak and call themselves my name, unquote. Your physical body is a field of energy with a certain form, however, and when someone asks you your name, your lips speak it. And yet, the name does not belong to the atoms and molecules in the lips that utter the syllables. The name has meaning only to you. Within your body, you cannot put your finger upon your own identity. If you could travel within your body, you could not find where your identity resides. Yet you say, this is my body, and this is my name. The soul is not frightened for its identity. It is sure of itself. It ever seeks. It is not afraid of being overwhelmed by experience or perception. If you had a more thorough understanding of the nature of identity, you would not, for example, fear telepathy. For behind this concern is the worry that your identity will be swept away by the suggestions or thoughts of others. It seems to you that you have only one form, the physical one that you perceive, and no other. It also seems that your form can only be in one place at one time. You have indeed other forms that you do not perceive, and you also create various kinds of forms for various purposes, although you do not perceive these physically either. You are presently focused not only in your physical body, but within a particular frequency of events that you interpret as time. Other historical periods exist simultaneously, in forms quite as valid, and other reincarnational selves. Again, you simply are not tuned to those frequencies. You can know what happened in the past and have histories because, according to the rules of the game that you accepted, you believe that the past, but not the future, can be perceived. You could have histories of the future in the present if the rules of the game were different. In other levels of reality, the rules of the game change. After death, in your terms, you are quite free perceptively. The future appears as clearly as the past. The so-called stream of consciousness is simply that, one small stream of thoughts, images, and impressions, part of a much deeper river of consciousness that represents our own far greater existence and experience. You spend all your time examining this one small stream so that you become hypnotized by its flow and entranced by its motion. Simultaneously, these other streams of perception and consciousness go by without your notice, yet they are very much a part of you. They represent quite valid aspects, events, actions, and emotions with which you are also involved in other layers of reality. You are as actively and vividly concerned in these realities as you are in the one in which your main attention is now focused. Often you tune into these other streams of consciousness without realizing you have done so. For again, they are a part of the same river of your identity. All are therefore connected. Any creative work involves you in a cooperative process in which you learn to dip into these other streams of consciousness. You come up with a perception that has far more dimensions than one arising from the one narrow, usual stream of consciousness that you know. Great creativity is then multidimensional for this reason. Its origin is not from one reality, but from many, and it is tinged with the multiplicity of that origin. Great creativity always seems greater than its pure physical dimension and reality. By contrast with the so-called usual, it appears almost as an intrusion. It takes the breath away. Such creativity automatically reminds each man of his own multidimensional reality. The words, know thyself, therefore, mean far more than most people ever suppose. In moments of solitude, you may become aware of some of these other streams of consciousness. These other existences of yours go on quite merrily, whether you are waking or sleeping, but while you are awake, ordinarily you block them out. In the dream state, you are much more aware of them, although there is a final process of dreaming that often masks intense psychological and psychic experience. Unfortunately, what you usually recall is this final dream version. Some dreams themselves do take place in psychic or mental areas connected with your daily activities, but in the very deep reaches of sleep experience, those, incidentally, not yet touched upon by scientists in so-called dream laboratories, you are in communication with other portions of your own identity and with the other realities in which they exist.